We never really left, if you look in your heart.
That's real.
This is live from the Hellmouth, and I want to say that this time I came up with
you
the
did.
Trivia.
This was... It's the last time.
Yeah.
For this season.
And yeah.
Your first time.
I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, me too.
So, my idea was, what have we been missing in the Buffy comics? Like, what was the one place that always really kind of got our hearts bumping, our minds racing, and it was the Bronze.
The Bronze.
Oh,
iconic.
You don't need more than one club if the Bronze is the
exactly.
club. So my thought is, if you had the Bronze at your disposal as a venue, what party would you throw in the Buffyverse? And what monster would come and destroy it?
Okay. So, like we said, these trivia things have proven to be kind of like the hardest parts of these podcasts.
Yeah.
Coming up with answers and questions is like, for some reason, we're like left speechless. Mm. Anyway, so I have the kind of party that we would have. I do not have the monster. If you have a monster after hearing this,
tweet me. Yes.
Tweet me. Hashtag live from the Hellmouth. So my party was going to be kind of like a travel back in time,
mm-hmm.
like a
rhinoceros party. A historical rhinoceros party.
Okay. I was going to say Renaissance, but then it kind of started coming out as Renaissance, as British people do.
With vampires.
Yes, exactly. But I thought it'd be so much fun to kind of have like Angel and Buffy back in... Not, I guess it'd be further than when Angel was from, a little bit.
I just always love those flashback episodes
Same.
Where you see old Angelus and old Spike.
But it's also kind of like a mix on those episodes where they time travel and they take
mm-hmm.
place. Like, I know Riverdale's coming up with one where they're all kind of back in, like, 50s, 60s garb or something.
Right.
So I don't have a monster, but I think it'd be really fun to see everyone dressed up kind of like Drusilla.
I would love to see a kind of monster like we got with the 1950s, the teacher-student love affair where they acted it out, and Angel and Buffy, that was, it's the cutest episode ever, worth the rewatch. My party would be a Sadie Hawkins dance.
Yes.
Girls ask the guys, it's always the surprise. That's a just
did
a
you
classic.
Have Sadie Hawkins at your...
We didn't, but
neither did we. Okay.
But it's lived
it's
on
like
in legend.
That stupid patriarchal, like...
Women get a choice
exactly.
for one day to
but
choose
also,
their night.
You want to be like, I want to choose.
Right. So my bad guy would be this like evil coven of witches that comes in, and their big thing is they can enlist the girls there, the women there from Sunnydale High, into their like army, into their legions, and then they like fight off the bad guys, and then but the bad guys are just boys, and it becomes this whole gender thing. And then I kind of want at the end for them not even to get defeated, but just kind of like reform a little bit.
Yeah.
And you have like Artemis's army or like the Amazons or the Lady Liberator just running around defeating male vampires or warlocks or whoever.
I'm a fan. Also forgot to mention that Xander would be the jester.
Yeah. Oh my
God. Just thought I'd throw that out.
It's a party I'd go to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That feels good to
That's
say.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Mostly because I guess you'll hear this like over the course of a few days, but we banged this out in 2 days.
We have really just kind of cloistered ourselves.
We have. We've become very comfortable.
Yeah.
We've also decided that this would be a profession for both of us because you sit in your pajamas and whatever you want.
WNYC, hit us up,
please.
We are your next dope queens. Two dope queens. We will be there. So I think what we're going to do, we're going to mix a little business and pleasure.
Yeah.
We're going to kick it off with revisiting format.
We are. So I know in the beginning we talked a lot about format and kind of what it meant to have Buffy as a comic versus a television show. And so one of the things that I was questioning was how it came out. Because I know we originally received the comics from our friend Leia, and they were digital copies. So
mm-hmm.
we read them, and we didn't actually realize that there was a fifth installation to complete Long Way Home. So originally...
Or the first volume.
The first volume,
the Long Way
Home. Exactly. So we found out that they were actually released in five different... Not episodes. What do you even call them? Installations?
Yeah, like very small books. These are
very,
not big...
They're like maybe 10 pages, not even, right?
Well, I guess there's 24 sides to the, so yeah, like 10 to 12 yeah, pages.
Exactly.
On average.
But they're released month to month. Mm-hmm. Which, first of all, is a long time. And I know we're, in, especially because we're going from TV where you get it week to week. So imagine waiting a month.
Yeah.
For your next installation. You and go, you're only getting 10 pages.
You go from, it must be Tuesday, Dawn's in Trouble, to, it must be the first of the month.
Exactly. Dawn is in Trouble. Exactly. So we're just kind of thinking about what that meant in terms of how people take it in. And I know, especially right now, we're watching Buffy on Netflix, and that's not how it was originally meant to be viewed. So I don't know if you had any thoughts in terms of how it was released or what it does for it. Because I know we were reading it and you just reread the fifth one, like, mm-hmm. 30 minutes ago, and you took you no time. So, I don't know.
I think for me, it is the forced pacing of a Buffy mm-hmm. show. And it depends. I know you can be a selective watcher. I know for me, like when I watch Mad Men, I just rewatched it, only watching the parts where Peggy gets promoted. So I was like, what a female positive show this is. She's just making her way in the world. But unless you're, if you're not doing that with Buffy, it is forced pacing. Yeah. They make you take time and you go through it. Whereas these comics, like you said, I banged out one of the comics in like 10 minutes. Or I could have waited, mm-hmm. I could have read it, taken a little bit longer, really looked at the images, because I think they do lend themselves to a more formal analysis, kind of critical thinking. So I think for me, the format question and the release question is, you have this tension of, I can read it so fast, mm-hmm. but if they're only released once a month, what does that do for my interest level?
Also, just for the overall story arc, because I know we were talking about in a previous episode that the original series was episodic, and mm-hmm. this one doesn't feel episodic.
Not at all.
Even though it's released in a, like, larger paradigm of the episodic storytelling, it's month by month, and yet you get this overarching storyline, and it feels like you can't keep up. Like, it's hard for us to keep up, and we read this in, like, one sitting.
I'm very much reminded of kind of, like, a Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. or, like, Aragorn, these kind of very fanboy mm-hmm. texts where you're expected to know a lot of different yeah. details. You're expected to keep up. Part of me is seeing this as reemerging in popular culture, kind of with how Marvel is incorporating all of their different worlds.
Yeah.
You have to be really aware of all of the different facets of Buffy.
Which even we're not. Like,
no, we are by no means experts. You all know as much, if not more, than we do. But we are your mediums, nonetheless. And I think one of the aspects of the comics I wanted to talk mm-hmm. about, and you wanted to talk about, was Slay the Critics.
Yes.
Which is, first of all, the name.
Yes.
Because Slay the Critics, you kind of almost get the idea, like, at first I thought this was going to be a critique. Like, mm-hmm. people writing in, yeah. fans writing in, saying what they liked and what they didn't like.
Yes.
Because it's such a fan-based,
it's, I would say it's a labor of love.
It's a labor of love, and I think going back to what we were saying about waiting every month mm-hmm. and them being very short, is that this was not made for people who just want to read a comic book.
Yeah.
Or interested in a female vampire slayer. It's interested in Buffy specifically. Yeah. And you're writing to the funnel of Buffy lovers that have made it to the very end. Mm-hmm. So Slay the Critics is, I guess, Joss's hatred of, I guess, Fox and the people who critique him. But it just, it's kind of a funny little yeah. tongue-in-the-cheek. Because these are not critics. These are people who would slay the critics. They love Joss.
Exactly.
I guess, here, I think, Allie, read this part, the beginning of Ethan Connolly's write-in.
I cried. Not manly, I admit it, but yes. Way back in December 2005, when Joss announced he would be writing season 8, I cried. And had a good reason, too. Buffy was coming back.
See, they're in love. They're absolutely I've been greatly anticipating the arrival of the new comic book day.
It's also weird, though, because we talked about this when we were first ever going over the Slay the Critics. Mm-hmm. They're almost all men.
Yeah, you got,
and, like, very white boy men names. Like, Ethan,
here's
Joe,
Ethan. Here's Josh. Paul. Here's William. And then we have Steve. I love that one. And then at the very end, you have Mish X.
Yes.
And it is a woman. And Michelle, you can tell, because Scott Alley, who is, I forget where exactly he fits in with the
whole thing, but
it looks like he's the editor.
Okay.
So he's an editor, and he has this line that very much reminds me of a Joss Whedon interview about Felicia Day,
yep.
when he's describing Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, and he says, the little girl who stood up in the room and kind of explained to them.
And, like, blew everyone out of the water.
Blew everyone out of the water. And it was, just listen to Scott Atley. I'm sure he gets along with Joswell. That last letter was from Michelle DeVee, whom I first met through the Buffy letter Coles nearly a decade ago. In 1999, she ran the letter column for me in the first Angel comics I did. Merely a high school girl in Scotland at the time.
Merely a high school girl. Like,
I remember when I was a mere high school girl.
Come on.
So weak. So timid.
Were you a mere lad then? Like, what were you in high school?
So you get this kind of gendered language, and you just also get a lot of rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
Which is the basis of Joss.
Yes.
Is people who are really excited about what he has to offer and are almost a little fanatic.
They fanatic are, fans. And also almost a little bit blind to kind of what's happening. Yes. It's very much like, I have this, like, this allyship with Joss, and, like, whatever he creates, I'm gonna love. And it's, like, you can step back. Like, we both love Buffy. Like,
yes.
From what we've seen, it's an amazing show. I just wrote a letter to Joss for class, yep. And I kind of picked it apart, but I can see what, like, why he exists, like, the role he has in the industry, but it just kind of feels like, with a slate of critics, it's, like, we already know that you're loved.
Yes.
And, like, the whole point that this is a comic shows that you're loved. The fact that you could bring something from TV to comics and still have a reasoning and have financial, like, stability through the comics, it's, like...
And I have a curiosity about these comics because they were made in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
They were made after Buffy ended. Buffy began in, I want to... 97,
I think, yeah.
And so I think what's curious to me, because we've taken English 481, and it has a very heavy Twitter presence. Mm-hmm. So anytime I see something, it can immediately hit back. Yeah. I have live tweeted several shows. I have been very involved online. I know you have too. And I think you get a different sort of fan response when you have slower platforms, when it's snail mail, when it's older internet, it's like the beginning of Buffy. So I wonder how that changes fan culture to have a slower response time between fans.
I like that. I never even thought about that.
Because the only thing they had to measure it was how many people were watching.
That's true.
Why, you know, Dollhouse got canceled. That's why Firefly got canceled. And you have, like, niche fan sites, but if you're a big corporate overlord, who's going on that?
That doesn't interest you.
Right. So, unless you can sell DVDs. I did learn, Casey. I did learn. So I think that's food for thought.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have the answers.
Definitely not. I think also it's kind of this, again, it's the reactionary. I think so much of what goes on the internet is, like, purely reactionary and, like, your gut reaction. And I feel like that's not always the best thing. And it's just very much a, like, maybe I haven't even watched everything that I'm seeing and I'm going to give you a gut reaction. And it's, like, also these, I don't know. The Slay the Critics things, they seem very fake. And it's, like, even if you were to include them, why wouldn't you make it more authentic, more genuine? It just feels like you have the same Joe Schmo writing in every month saying what, like, an amazing author Joss Whedon is.
It feels toothless.
Yes.
And I think we can go from that toothless aspect of Buffy to a very untoothless aspect of Buffy. The biting final installation of Volume 1.
It's crazy.
I loved it.
It was amazing. And it's this weird, like, it would be the great, like, episode. If this was one large episode, it's that cliffhanger that keeps you coming back to the next week.
Yes.
Except in this case, you'd have to wait
a month. And I think for me, my thesis, if I had to make a thesis about this, is that, and I'm going to go at it a little roundabout. I don't know if you've seen Skyfall or Spectre of James Bond.
I've seen Skyfall.
So Skyfall has a really interesting opening kind of credit sequence. They always have really cool ones, and it's him kind of cartoon James Bond with, like, lots of different women and getting thrown off buildings and getting shot and all of these kind of crazy, ridiculous scenarios. And the idea that the James Bond series is really getting at that I think is cool is repeated trauma to heroes and, like, what that does to their psyche. And this comic book, the fifth installation, has us following a Buffy lookalike.
Yeah.
A Buffy doppelganger, and she has two or three kind of keeping her safe around the world. And to me, this Buffy doppelganger played out in her mind the trauma and kind of a bit of catharsis that Buffy maybe doesn't have the emotional ability to do. And this woman is doing it for her. And I said before, it really reminds me of the short life of Bree.
Yeah.
It was the Twilight companion book of this kind of young girl who only was a vampire for a short time, but it was a companion book. And that's what this really reminds me of. But I wish she had lived longer because she seems like such a genuine and thoughtful person. Do you have knee jerks? I kind of word vomited a bit.
I mean, when I was first introduced to her, I will admit, like a lot of the introductions, I was confused. I was very like, what is happening? And the thing is, when we first meet her, she has black hair.
Yep.
And the idea that, like, the face structure and the whole, like, physicality to her is very in likeness to Buffy. But I feel like it's not the... I almost wish you had been introduced to her as Buffy first.
Mm-hmm.
And then taken a step back and been like, this is not what she looks like normally. This is what she's like, and this is how she got to where she is. Because I feel like Buffy is a blonde, and, like...
Yes.
She's not a blonde, the doppelganger.
And I think that continuing to talk about this trauma that Buffy can't catharsize or whatever you want to call it, that's not what you call it, but that this girl can, and we keep saying this woman, this girl, because I don't think they ever really...
They don't give a name, I don't think.
Give a name, and I think that's very purposeful, but there's this panel, I'm not sure, I guess the book doesn't give the exact page number, but it is after this big fight scene where you see this recurring character who talked back to Andrew in the second book, the pink mohawk woman. But you have our lady, our Buffy doppelganger, talking to what seems to be a watcher or some sort of adult figure. And it's on page, I think we're pulling it up now.
This page?
Yeah, 16? It's 16 is roughly where it is. And she's saying, need a serious dye job and you'd have to maintain it yourself. Body type, height are good. Have to pad the bra a little. But we're counting on these guys never to have actually seen her. You get what all this is. And she says, you want me to be Buffy. And there's this kind of, like, false idols almost. I think you kind of get into Buffy isn't even herself anymore.
That, and it also ties into this idea that, again, Joss is playing at, he knows what he's done in the creation of Buffy, and he knows that it is this, like, ideological white woman. At least that's what I read into it. But then, again, it's this weird, like, you're saying it, you're mentioning it, but you're keeping it the same. And, like, that's my continual problem with Joss and the Whedonverse, is that he can make it known that he's aware, but then nothing changes.
Yes. I think that has been a recurring thing. And I also want to point out something that I really, really like about this. I think this is just like a love fest for this, which is at the beginning, you have Buffy Summers is dead. You know, Yaman of the Hutt? I can never say.
No.
Has killed the Slayer, scream his name, dance his clan's war stomp, for he is mighty and merciless. And then she says, in her mind, it's definitely, it's one of those green classic bubbles without a tail. The funny part about all this, I never even met her, talking about Buffy. And then you have this whole chapter, and then it's the same moment.
Yeah.
The time jumping you were talking about. And she goes, but that's not the point. There's always a name, Lincoln, Hitler, Gandhi. The name can inspire awe, sometimes great things. So you get back to this icon of Buffy. And then I think what's awesome and what really hit home for me on my thesis of trauma is at the very end, you don't even know who I am, but I do. And I think, and you don't know, I'm assuming she dies at the end of this. Her eyes do open after she's thrown to the ground, but then they close. And I had this crazy thought that what if, like, this is the real Buffy?
That's what I was thinking!
What if it doesn't even matter? Because she's creating, like, this girl army, and everyone can take her place because they're all, like, equally intense. And that would be insane.
But it's also weird that they have to take on this Buffy persona.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what... And it's weird. And I guess it's also weird because we have, like, the doll has kind of sort of initiation that we were talking about. We have this woman. And then we have, like, Buffy and her girls and Satsu. And it's just, like, you have these different ways that people are getting into the Slayerhood, I guess you'd call it. And they, it's not harmonious. It's just, it's, I don't get it.
I think we kind of skipped over this to get to the end, but she has, right before what I'm assuming is her death, much better last words than Wash, I'll tell you that this right off the bat. She goes, in the moments that matter, even our own names are just sounds people make to tell us apart.
Yeah.
What we are isn't that. The real question the real questions run deeper. Can I fight? Did I help? Did I do for my sisters, my comrades, children, slimy slug clan? There's a chain between each and every one of us. And like the man said, you either feel it, tug, or you ignore it. I tried to feel it. I tried to face the darkness like a woman, and I don't need any more than that. You don't have to remember me. And I think you get the word of the chain, which is what ties all the Slayers together. But I love that we ended on this and not the slightly more catty sisterhood at Scotland, because this is what it is. Like, this is what the Slayers are about.
It is, and I will say, it feels very, like, martyrdom to Buffy.
Yeah.
And, like, that's where I don't know what to feel.
Well, I think it ties in to questions of resurrection with Buffy. Yes. She's died, she's come back, she's died, she's come back, and now she has her copies out in the world, dying and coming back.
It's basically Buffy Summers cannot die.
Buffy Summers will never die. Never age, and will never die.
Exactly.
And you know what? I don't think that this podcast can die along with this nameless Buffy.
Nope.
I think we gotta give it another stab.
We are.
We're gonna do it, guys.
We decided. Directly after we finished the first half of the episodes, Hannah and I were both kind of like, wouldn't it be funny if, like, haha, we continued it, but we were both kind of serious.
We both edged at it. Like, wouldn't it be so crazy? I feel like I'm announcing the impending birth of my child. I'm like, guys, we have an announcement.
Let me release the box of the balloons, and you can all cheer.
But so, yeah. Season 2 will come at you after this winter break.
We will catch up on Buffy.
We will do it.
And,
In the meantime, binge the crap out of this one.
Do it.
Ugh.
Let us know what you feel, what you thought, what you feel, what you thought.
What you think. What you think. Give us your thinks.
We've been talking for a long time. Let's just put it that way.
Let's put it that way. And without further ado, signing off on Live from the Hellmouth. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Ellie.
Bye.
Bye.